Yeah, we've been in a series for the last 5 weeks. It's a 10-week series called Summer in the Psalms, where each week we've been looking at a different psalm. And what we usually do here, we've been picking a psalm and we've been reading through it. And so usually in church, we have a time of worship where we kind of gather and we sing a bunch of songs. And then we have a time of sermon where we look at this psalm and we talk about it. And tonight, we want to try something different. I want to try to combine those two things, believe it or not, because the psalm that we're going to read tonight is actually about worship. And so I thought, let's not just kind of do worship and then talk about it. Let's kind of do worship and talk about it all at the same time. And so we'll still read the psalm together. I'll offer some thoughts along the way, but we're going to intersperse some songs and some worship time in the midst of that. So again, it'll be a little different if you're a regular attender of New Denver. Hopefully this is a nice change of pace. If you're new, hopefully this is a way for us to say we always want to think about and try new and creative ways to kind of engage God and think about Him. And so we're going to do a little bit of that tonight. So honestly, the sermon kind of starts like right now. But before we jump into it and before we read this psalm that we're going to look at, I wanted to ask all of us to just stop and pause and actually welcome God into this place tonight. That's where worship really begins. And it's a little strange to say welcome God into this place because I think God's already here. We sort of believe God is everywhere, and so He's already here. We don't actually have to welcome Him to be here. But there is a sense of us welcoming Him to enter into our lives and to engage with us. There is a sense of, are we actually here to meet with God tonight? And so for whatever reason you came to church, and maybe you came to church tonight because that's just what you do. It's a habit. You've been a Christian for a long time. You're involved here, and you come to New Denver regularly, and so you just kind of come every week, and this is another week. Or maybe you came to catch up with old friends. Maybe you came to meet some new friends. Maybe you're new to Denver and you're looking for a place or a community of faith to get involved in. So you're kind of checking this place out. Maybe you're volunteering tonight. Maybe you're helping with the host team or production or something like that. And so you came because you're serving. Or maybe you just came because you've had a really rough week. Or you've had a really rough month or a season of life, and something just drew you here tonight. You can't really put your finger on it, but you came because you're looking for something, and you can't even really say what it is you're looking for, but you're here. Whatever reason you have for coming to church today, we just want to stop and pause and kind of take all of those reasons, and those are all good reasons to come, but take all of those reasons and just lay them at God's feet and say, ultimately, God, we want to just experience You here in this place tonight. We want to meet with You. We want to somehow, some way, open our lives together as a community and also individually in our own seats and in our own ways. We want to just open our lives and open our hearts up to You and be willing to meet with You tonight. And so we'll begin doing that by singing a song together. So I want to ask you to just stand right now. Go ahead and stand up. And we want to just take like a minute and just pause. And if you want to close your eyes and just kind of meditate, just take some time to clear the noise of our lives and the clutter away. And just in your own way, maybe pray silently to God that you want to meet with Him and you want to welcome Him into your life and into this place tonight. God, as we stand here before you tonight, we want to meet with you. And whatever that means, God, we recognize that we need your grace. We need your power. Some of us need your peace right now. Some of us just need hope. But whatever it is, God, we want to welcome you into this place. We want to open our hearts and open our lives to meet with you now. Would you go ahead and have a seat? Let's read a psalm from the book of Psalms in the Old Testament. It's Psalm 96 that we're going to take a look at tonight. There's a lot of psalms about this idea of worship, so we could have spent 10 whole weeks just on the idea of worship in the book of Psalms. We're going to look at one in particular tonight. It's Psalm 96, and I would like for you to actually read it with me. So we're going to read it in little chunks, and so let's read together the first three verses. We'll put it on the screen. Sing to Yahweh a new song. Sing to Yahweh all the earth. Sing to Yahweh, praise his name. Proclaim his salvation day after day. Declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous deeds among all peoples. Now, one quick comment about one word in the beginning here. It's the word Yahweh. That's actually the personal name for God that ancient Israelites used. That was the name that God told them to use when they talked to him. And they became so, I guess you could say, obsessed at one point in their history about potentially using this name in vain or using it wrongly or using it carelessly. In fact, one of the Ten Commandments said, don't do that. They got so scared of doing that that they stopped actually using the name altogether. And so they would actually use the word, the name, to refer to God. Or sometimes they would use the words, the Lord, to refer to God. And so even in their scriptures, they would do this. When they came across the name Yahweh, they would put in, instead, they would put in the name, or the words, the name, or the Lord. And our Bibles still follow this practice. So anytime you are reading in the Old Testament, and you come across a psalm or a passage where the word Lord is in all capital letters, that's actually in Hebrew the ancient name of Yahweh. And I think the word the Lord is a little misleading because it's more of a title. Not that God isn't a Lord, but it's more of this title. And so we forget when we read that it's a lot more personal than that. So we actually put the word Yahweh back in this psalm as we read it tonight. But it begins real simply, this psalm. And this was a song that was probably sung, just like the songs we're singing tonight in ancient worship services of Hebrews. But it begins real simply by saying, sing to Yahweh a new song. It's not that old songs are bad. Old songs are good. Sing some old songs from time to time. But sing new songs as well. Write new songs. Think about new songs. Find new ways to sing to Yahweh. And then it says, sing to Yahweh, again, in case we missed that, all the earth. Which is really important, because it doesn't say sing to God or sing to Yahweh all the priests, or sing to Yahweh all the leaders or all the elders or all the people who have seemingly have their lives together. It doesn't say sing to Yahweh all the Hebrews. Nobody else can sing to Yahweh. It doesn't say sing to Yahweh all the Christians, all the pastors. It doesn't even say sing to Yahweh all the people. It says, sing to Yahweh all the earth. Like everything that could sing, everything that's been made, everything that's been created somehow and in some way should be worshiping and singing to God. Now, goes on and says in the next line, sing to Yahweh again to repeat. Then it says, praise his name. And proclaim his salvation day after day. So what do we sing to Yahweh? How do we worship God? Well, we worship him for who he is and what he's done. We worship him for who he is. That's what it means when it says praise his name. It doesn't mean Name isn't, it's not that the word name or the word Yahweh is better than the name John, and so we praise that word and not other words, or Jill or Norton or anything else. It's not about the actual name. It's about his name represents who he is, his character, his attributes, what God is like. So you sing and you worship God for what he's like, who he is, but you also sing and worship God for what he's done. It says, proclaim his salvation day after day. Proclaim his love, his forgiveness, the way he rescued you, the way he reached down and saved you. So sing about who he is and what he's done. And then, just in case we didn't get it, these songs tend to say the same thing, just in different ways. It says in the third verse there, declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous deeds among all peoples. So declare his glory. Again, that's who he is. And glory is kind of a churchy, religious-sounding word. It just means the way God's character shines, how brilliant it is, how radiant it is in our world. That's his glory. So declare who he is, his glory, and then again, what he's done, his marvelous deeds among all people. So just to kind of give you a definition real quickly, worship is simply the response of all creation to who God is and what he has done. It's the response of all creation to who God is and what he has done. And that means that all of us can worship God for who he is and what he's done. And it doesn't matter what our circumstances are. It doesn't matter what you bring into church tonight. It doesn't matter if you're having a bad week or a good week. It doesn't matter if you feel like you're a really religious person or you're not a religious person at all. It's not dependent on you or me or your circumstances or my circumstances. Worship is about God. It's about him and who he is and what he's done. And it's about recognizing that he made all of us to worship him. Somehow and in some way, he created you and he created me to live a life of worship and response to who he is and what he's done. So with that in mind, we're going to sing another song now to actually do this, to just worship God and to declare this truth and to remind ourselves that we were made to worship him, and we were made to worship him for who he is and what he's done. Let's read some more verses from Psalm 96. It continues, and let's read these out loud. For great is Yahweh and most worthy of praise. He is to be feared above all gods. For all the gods of the nations are idols, but the Lord made the heavens. Splendor and majesty are before him. Strength and glory are in his sanctuary. Now, these verses provide a bit of another angle or almost another definition of what worship is. Worship is essentially ascribing worth and value to something that's deserving of worth and value. And it's a response of admiration. It can be admiring someone or something. It can be adoring someone or something. But it's giving them worth and value because we believe they deserve worth or value. Now, in ancient Israel, the Hebrews were tempted to worship other gods. Many Israelites, they still believed that there were many gods in the world, and their God, Yahweh, was maybe just the greatest God or the most powerful God. And so they often worshiped him, but they were also sometimes tempted to worship other nations' gods. And one of the ways they would do this is they would actually make idols. So they would construct these wooden idols, or they would carve these statues, and they would put them on their shelves, and then they would worship these carved idols or statues that they had made. And it's almost like the psalmist is saying here, these idols don't really do anything. And the gods you're worshiping, it's just like the idols you're worshiping. They don't move. They can't get down off the shelf. They can't save you. They haven't made anything. They haven't done anything. They can't actually help you. They can't answer your prayers. But God is different. I mean, you made the idols, but God made the heavens. Look up into the sky, and every single thing you see, God made. And so God is the one that's deserving of all of the value and worth and the worship that we can give, not these silly idols or other gods that you're chasing after. Now, in our culture, we don't really have any idols. I don't know if any of you have idols sitting on your shelves at home that you actually worship. I don't think we have idols or gods like that anymore, but I think we still have idols and gods in our culture. There's a lot of people that we worship by giving huge amounts of worth and value to. Think about the Denver Broncos, right? I mean, think about this fall, how many tens of thousands of people are going to pack into a stadium, and then millions of people, including all of us, are going to pack around our TV sets on Sundays and ascribe huge amounts of worth and value to the Denver Broncos and cheer them on as loud as we can and be super excited about it when they're hopefully winning. And, I mean, it's like worship, isn't it? Think about the way that we follow celebrities. Think about the celebrities you follow that you stay up on. Think about the albums, you know, music you buy, the films, your favorite actors, the books, the authors that you read. Think about how much money you spend following them. Think about how closely you follow what they say, what they think, what their attitudes are, who they are. Think about how much value and worth we ascribe to them. Or maybe it's just people that you admire. Think about maybe mentors or people that are successful in business that you would love to emulate. People that you look at like Dan Snyder that you want to dress like. I mean, think about the people that we all admire and look up to and want to in some form or fashion be like. Now, it's not bad. There's nothing evil. There's nothing wrong. I love football and I love cheering on the Broncos, and there's nothing wrong about admiring or respecting or looking up to people, but it's almost like this psalm is reminding us that there's one person that should get all of the worth and value that we can ascribe to anything. There's one person that stands above all the rest. There's one person that we should cheer louder for than anyone else. There's one person that we should get more excited about. There's one person that's more deserving of our praise and worship and value and honor that we can give to anyone else. And it's God. Now, I think there's other idols we worship, and there maybe aren't just people, they're things. Fame, popularity, or maybe just approval, just the desire of other people to like you. Money, a lot of us we've put a lot of value and worth on the pursuit of money and living kind of the good life. Adventure, think about that one. How much value and worth do we place on the adrenaline high that we get when we go skiing or mountain climbing or a 14er or whatever it is? Name your adventure. We all do it. We all love it. And but we place a lot of value and worth on that. How about this? Intimacy with other people. Think about how much we cherish the idea that we can all find our soulmate. And that we can all find the right friends that we click with, and we can all find the most real and authentic community. And think about how much value and worth we place on intimacy and true love with other people. Now, again, none of those things are necessarily wrong or evil, but there's a sense that we can put all of those things above God. And when we do that, they do become idols that could almost be called evil in our lives, because they get off track and they take us off of our priorities, and they don't help us to remember that there's really only one person who should be deserving of all of our worship, all of our praise, all the value and worth that we can ascribe to someone. And so the question I want to ask at this point is, what are your idols? What are my idols? Think about your life for a second. What are the things that you give huge amounts of worth and value to in your life? We're going to sing another song now, and I'd love for you to make this song like a song of confession. Matt talked about that a few weeks ago, and a lot of psalms were written that way. They were psalms of prayer and confession, and it's a song that basically talks about casting down our idols and seeking God with our whole hearts. And so maybe make this a time where you think in your mind and your heart, God, this thing, this person, this relationship, this pursuit, if I'm honest, it's my top priority right now, and it shouldn't be. And I need to put it in its proper place. And so, God, I just want to come to you and surrender that to you and give it to you and come back to you. And you can stay seated in your seat as we sing this song again. But if you want, you can actually, and this is a little strange, but if you want to actually kneel on the ground and bow down, that's a way of really indicating a surrender to God. We don't see that publicly much anymore. Sometimes you see people bowing down, prostrate on the ground in prayer. And it's like the ultimate submission of just kneeling before God and showing humility. Other people raise their hands when they worship, and that can be a little weird if you're not one of those people, but it's really simple. Raising your hands is just, it's a sign of surrender. It's like saying, I take my life and I give it to you, God, and I give the things that are misplaced and misprioritized to you, and I want to surrender to you. So if you want to do that, you can, or if you're the type that just wants to sit quietly in your seat, and reflectively, sort of in your heart, sing this song and lay down whatever idols you feel like maybe you have and seek God once again. Let's do that now. Psalm 96 continues. Let's read the next few verses together again out loud. Ascribe to Yahweh, all you families of nations. Ascribe to Yahweh glory and strength. Ascribe to Yahweh the glory due his name. Bring an offering and come into his courts. Worship Yahweh in the splendor of his holiness. Tremble before him, all the earth. Say among the nations, Yahweh reigns. The world is firmly established. It cannot be moved. He will judge the peoples with equity. This part of the psalm really gets to the question of how do we worship Yahweh? How do we worship God or Jesus? And there's a few words that stick out in this part of the psalm and even back to the beginning of the psalm. And so if we could put the next slide up, there's 10 words throughout this song. 10 verbs, and they're 10 actual commands to you and me that say, sing to Yahweh, praise his name, proclaim his salvation, declare his glory, ascribe to Yahweh glory and strength, bring an offering, come into his courts, worship Yahweh, tremble before him, and say, Yahweh reigns. All of these words have the sense of declaring who Yahweh is, who God is, and what he has done. And it's not just passive. It's not. It's about God and what he's done and also what he continues to do. In fact, it ends with saying, say Yahweh reigns. He still reigns. He is reigning today. It's not like he's sitting up in heaven just kind of watching. I think sometimes I feel that way, like he's got all these TV monitors and he's just kind of watching everything that's happening down here on earth. And it's not like that. It's Yahweh is ruling and reigning over the earth right now as we speak. And part of worship is declaring that, is saying that. And so we sing and we praise and we proclaim and we declare and we ascribe. And then it says, there's an active part. We bring an offering and we come into his courts. Now for an ancient Israelite, what this meant was bringing a sacrifice to the temple courts in Jerusalem. And a sacrifice would have been an animal that they would have brought to offer as a sacrifice. And it wasn't just about appeasing God. It wasn't about forgiveness of sin, though that was part of it. But bringing an offering was an act of worship. I mean, think about it. You're a farmer and you raise sheep or you grow crops or you raise cattle and you've been raising 10 cattle this year and you've been fattening your cattle up. You've been taking care of them. You've been grooming them. You've been making sure they're healthy. You're doing everything you can so that when you take them to the market and sell them to someone else, you're going to get the most money you can. This is your livelihood. This is what you do for a living. This is how you feed your family. And then deciding you're going to take one of those cattle, the best one, the one that doesn't have any flaws, the one that's the most healthy, the one that looks the best, the one that would get more money than any other at the market, and you're going to bring that as an offering to God. And you're going to bring it before Him and say, God, with this offering, I worship you today. And the truth is, you gave me all of these cattle. They're all yours. I really owe all of them to you. I owe everything to you. I owe my life to you. I owe my salvation to you. I owe everything to you. And so as I give you this one today, this offering, it's a way of worshiping you. And it's a way of simply saying, once again, you reign, not just over this world, but you reign over my life. That's what it meant when it said, bring an offering and come into his courts. So, tonight and right now, we're actually going to take up an offering. And I didn't tell you that part of the story so that you would like line your cattle up and bring them up to the front, or you would feel guilty like you had to give a lot of money or anything like that, because oftentimes we associate taking up an offering in church with collecting money for the church. And that's not really what it's about. I mean, that's a result of taking up the offering. And at times, we've even talked here at New Denver about not taking up an offering. Let's just put boxes in the back. And if people want to give, they can. They can just drop something in the box. But let's not make a big deal out of it, because we don't want to do that. It's not about money or any of those things. Yet every time we've thought about that, we've thought, but that kind of takes the focus off of what an offering actually is supposed to be. It's an act of worship. And so to put it in its proper context, it's not just about giving money. It's about just saying, God, you've given so much to me, and so I just take some of that and I give it back to you right now. And so tonight, if you want to be a part of that, you don't have to, and certainly if you're new, whatever, but we're going to take up an offering now, and just keep in mind, when we do this, it's an act of worship. It's a part of worshiping God for who He is and what He's done. So host team can come forward, and we'll take up an offering now. Now, let me be honest for a minute. When it comes to this idea of worship, and as I look at and think about these words, praising and proclaiming and declaring and ascribing and worshiping, and honestly, I don't always feel like doing this. I'm not a great singer, so I don't sing real loud in front of other people. And I don't always, I'm not necessarily the kind of person who lavishes praise and compliments on other people all the time, so it's always weird to lavish praise and compliments on God. And then when I read some of these words talking about ascribing to Yahweh glory and strength, those are such abstract concepts. It's hard to connect with at times, and it just sounds kind of religious and churchy. And then there are just times I don't even feel like worshiping. Like, I just don't want to. I'm not really excited about God. In fact, I can be frustrated with God, or mad at God, or confused by God, and in those moments, the last thing you want to do is worship. That's not really what's on your heart or on your mind. But I want to introduce you to someone who has given me a different perspective on this idea of worship. When Janice and I lived in Austin, Texas, about 10 or 15 years ago, there was a guy that we met who, his name is Roger, and he attended and was involved in the church and the group that we were involved in. And Roger just had, he had a unique life, And he had a unique and really powerful perspective on his life and what he faced and on this idea of worship. So just want to show you a video of Roger now.
I have several projects. Living with cerebral palsy is definitely not easy. A lot of people don't understand cerebral palsy and they'll treat me different. A lot of people are either afraid of me or very uncomfortable to be around, and that hurts me because I want to be everybody's friend, and I can't help the fact that I have CP. My name is Walter Fono Jr., and I live in Central Austin, go Longhorns. Some of the struggles that I've faced with CP is I got to do stuff that a normal person would never have to do, like call around on the carpet every day. Sometimes it wears on my body. I lose a controller by a device that is called a pointer, and I peck on the keys just like a chicken. I get around town in my electric wheelchair. It allows me freedom to get around on my own. The other thing is loneliness. I am my own greatest enemy when I am left to my loneliness. But Jesus means everything to me. Without Jesus, I know I would have committed suicide by now, because life is not worth it without Jesus. All times come every day. Most of the time I try to knock them down because the gospel has changed my life in a great way that I will never ultimately know. Worship is my life. God has created me to worship, and Jesus paid the ultimate price. And if I don't totally worship him, it's like I don't appreciate his dying for me, and that is so powerful. One day I will be in eternity with God.
Okay, so I probably should have warned you. At our church in Austin, we had this worship service on Sunday nights, kind of like this, and it was a It was about 300 people that would go to this, and all young adults, and it was this huge band that would rock it out every Sunday night, and there was this drummer who played like so loud, and it was in this old gym, and the music was just, you know, bouncing off the walls. And we would do extended worship, like for 45 minutes we'd be singing, and sometimes I would preach, and Roger would always sit on the front row, and for 45 minutes straight, like, his arms would be flailing in the air, and he'd be singing at the top of his lungs, and you could hear him over the entire band and over everybody else in the entire room every Sunday night. And as you can imagine, his voice wasn't the most beautiful voice in the room to any of our ears. But to God's ears, it had to be the most beautiful voice in the room. Because from a place of loneliness, from a place of hardship, from a place of disability, from a place of so many setbacks in life, Roger worshiped God with all of his life and all of his heart and all of who he was. And it was like every Sunday when we would worship, it was such a picture of him saying, yeah, life is hard. It's harder than probably any of us in this entire room can imagine. But you know what? God still reigns. And Jesus loves me. And Jesus died for me. And Jesus rose from the grave. And God still reigns. And so I can worship. And I believe God has made me to worship. No matter how hard my week was, no matter how difficult it was, no matter how many setbacks I faced, Roger knew that God still reigned. And so it wasn't dependent on his circumstances. It was just that God was worthy of all his worship. And so, for me, Roger is like the example. Even when I face tough times, even when I go through a hard week, can I kind of just remember, you know what? God still reigns. And Jesus died for me, and Jesus rose from the grave, and that allows me to go to a place where I can still respond and worship to God for who he is and what he has done. And so tonight, we're just going to sing two more songs together. And these two songs are a way of worshiping God for who he is, for simply declaring and remembering that he really does reign. He really is the king, and he is on his throne ruling over this world. And we can worship him for that, and we can worship him for what he has done in all of our lives. Standing, there we go. If you'd stay standing for just a little bit longer, let's read the last few verses of this psalm together. Let's read it together. This is what it says. Let the heavens rejoice, let the earth be glad, let the sea resound and all that is in it. Let the fields be jubilant and everything in them. Let all the trees of the forest sing for joy. Let all creation rejoice before Yahweh, for he comes. He comes to judge the earth. He will judge the world in righteousness and the peoples in his faithfulness. So we're kind of back to where we started. Worship is about all creation responding to him for who he is, and what he's done, and what he's going to do, that one day he will come back, and he'll make everything right, and he'll make all things new. Now, I want to say one more thing before we take off tonight. Worship is not just about singing songs in church. And so, in fact, the prophets would come along after the psalms were written, and they would actually say, if you sing about God's love in church, and then you go out, and you don't really love people, that's not really worshiping. Worship is about what you do with your life. If you sing about God's forgiveness in church on Sunday, but then you go out, you don't really forgive other people. If you talk about God reigning and ruling over this world, but then you go out and you live a life where it doesn't really look like God is ruling or reigning, that's not really worship. Worship maybe starts here, but it doesn't end here. Worship is not just about our voices. It's about how we live our lives. And so we're going to give you one of these cards again when you walk out. And it's just got the first two verses of Psalm 96 on it. And what I'd like for you to do is every single day this week when you wake up in the morning is to pull this card out and read these verses and simply say, "Today, Yahweh, I want to sing to you a new song," whatever that looks like. "Today, Yahweh, I want to praise your name in all I do. And today, Yahweh, in all I say, in all I think, in all I plan, and in all I do, I want to somehow proclaim your salvation." And as you do that and as you worship him, may his peace and power go with you this week. One quick announcement, as Dan mentioned in the beginning, if you're new here or new-ish to New Denver Church, we've got Discovering NDC right after the service. Right now, it's going to be in this room right up here. So come on up. We've got dinner and all that. Otherwise, we'll see you next week where we'll continue this series, Summer in the Psalms. Thanks.